Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my usual excellent panel of experts, eager to debate almost anything you can think of. In the next 90 minutes, we are going to fix all of the world's problems. From Youngstown, Ohio, we have author, activist, and barkeep Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Thank you for that rousing introduction. It's better than calling me infamous. And I'm looking forward to a great show today because I know, Simon, you're going to keep me in check. And we're going to let the other ones talk their mouths off like I did a couple weeks ago.
Okay. Have you ever heard of the Ig Nobel Awards? And the reason I'm picking on you is you sprang to my mind this week. The annual event out of Harvard University happened, and what they do is they take the pick of the crop of serious research about pointless topics. And one of the winners just happened to be from Ohio, Professor Brad Bushman from Ohio State collaborated on a study that shows that when people are drunk, they think they are more attractive than when they're sober. Have you noticed this in your establishment?
Hell, if I noticed it, I practice it. Not just that, the infamous beer goggles, not only do I become attractive, funnier, wittier, wealthier, taller, skinnier, muscular, so do the opposite sex members. It is a match made in heaven. It is incredible. And that guy deserved the Pulitzer Prize. Don't you agree, Simon?
Oh, I think he deserves a Nobel rather than an Ig Nobel.
I'm gonna send him a case of wings.
Perfect. and joining us from the City of Angels, we have well-respected, attorney Peter Haven. Peter, welcome.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and the only thing I can think of is the only thing that makes people look more attractive than a case of beer is a bucket of wings to boot. That's all I can say.
I'm going for this prize next year. That's it.
Wow, and I can't believe they actually commissioned a study on this, as if all those guys in the bar couldn't have said, "I could have told you that." No, we had to study it to verify it. We had to study it.
We'll do a placebo effect.
Oh, they did that.
How'd they do that?
Well, they gave people drinks that were placebo drinks.
So it was like near beer.
Yeah.
Those people grew uglier as the evening wore on. They were really hot to begin the experiment, but as the evening wore on, nobody wanted to be near them.
What bothers me is that someone funded this stupid research. But let's move on. From the wilds of Southern California, we have the always colorful John Perry. John, welcome.
Hey, Simon, fellas, good to be with you guys. I personally would welcome any ignominious award from Harvard University. For instance, Simon, I was thinking about it, and you've been great for my self-awareness the entire process, because I don't know what it says about me, but being on your show is more demeaning than going to the free clinic for STD shots. So thank you.
Ah, And John, you're one of my favorite people.
Dr. Barrett, you're in the house. I wanted to ask Sammy real quick. Hey, Sammy, I'm going to do my own study, and here's my hypothesis. Drinking before pregnancy can cause pregnancy. Any volunteers?
John, you know, I think you're a good-looking guy, but I'll pass.
Simon, it's for the good of the study.
Okay, and from New Jersey, we're also joined by my good friend, and well, he's still a bit of a virgin at this game, Bill Conrad. Bill, welcome.
Hi, thank you. I was actually thinking of the same word of virgin when we talk about being on this this high-class discussion panel. I appreciate everything I've learned, and it's just a privilege to be with all of you. One thing I would like to chime in about is for these awards, I'll do whatever they want me to research for half the price, and you know, maybe I'll take money to research. You know, that's I could turn out some good stuff for these people.
they don't need it. Okay. Let's get on with the program. There's little doubt that the lead story this week is Syria. The U.S.-Russian agreement, quite frankly, has me reaching for my bottle of Tums. I see many significant issues. And Sam, you're relatively... yeah, moderate and sensible. What do you think?
In regards to what?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Moderate in regards to what?
Sam, the agreement, you know, this U.S. stroke Russian brokerage of dealing with Syria's... you know, chemical weapons.
I didn't think I was a moderate on that issue. I thought I was, but I'm
hey,
Ben
hey,
Drummer
Sam,
for this.
Have happen. A beer. Have a beer. You'll get more moderate.
Moderately good looking or moderately smarter. But anyway, the devils are in the detail, obviously, in any agreement. I'm all for anything that would not have a war. I really think that if we would have went into that, I think, as I stated on the show last Sunday, we were on the brink of bringing the world to the brink of war. So it's nice to see that, as John Perry pointed out, that the Democrats finally came to their senses and actually wanted to do United Nations brokered deal, and that's going to be put in place. I think the whole United Nations seemed to be behind it. They let Russia and the United States hammer out the details. And if Syria doesn't play by the rules, then I guess the United Nations acting with Russia behind us and China and other countries that were against us will then punish Syria. I hope that's what happened. I hope Syria complies, of course.
Peter, same question to you. Do you think that they're going to roll over and play ball?
Not entirely, but it's as good a solution as we can come up with right now. First of all, the only reason this solution is even being reached is because of the threat of war. If it weren't for the threat of missile strikes, nothing would be accomplished, absolutely nothing. And secondly, it's better than nothing, and it's kind of an attempt to kick the can. You know, they clearly... there wasn't going to be enough of consensus support for any kind of military strike. And this is probably as effective as anything right now in an effort to try to curb or prevent anything like this from happening in the near future. Is it going to be perfect? No, I don't think so. Am I very suspicious of a Russian-backed resolution with its ally Syria? Yeah, I'm suspicious of that. But again, it's better than any other alternative right now, which is why it's being explored.
John, I'm sure you're chomping a bit to explain that this Russian diplomacy is far better than going to war, even though you have a huge stockpile of weapons. Let me turn the mic over to you.
Simon, I've been waiting for this. It's called vindication. I'm glad to see that Obama and Kerry deferred to a more competent and capable individual to handle the situation, the next Nobel Peace Prize candidate, Putin. Somebody suggested last week that he should intervene, and although you and Peter may have derisively chortled at my comments, I think it was even Peter who said, oh yeah, let Putin handle it. That'll go off real good. At least someone in the administration was listening to your show last week, Simon, and followed my advice. So vindication, baby.
Well, let's give credit to where credit's due. John,
Obama's a genius. Cohesive
John
strategy
deserves,
at last.
John deserves a certain amount of vindication on this one. And
yeah,
let's
but
give
now
it
that
to
Obama's
him.
Done it, he's a genius, right? When I said
no, I didn't. Nobody said he's a genius. I don't think this is a very... I think this is just a kick the can down the road measure. I think this
well,
is just.
Week,
a
why do you say that, Peter?
Derisively, you and Simon at me. You got to admit that
they're just phoning the inevitable on this. But
and they
followed
my advice.
Yeah, that's right. No wait. Let's write this down, just so everybody is clear. Everyone heard John Perry last week, and the administration and the United Nations and the world decide to follow your advice. No doubt about it.
Didn't I lay it out for you guys? Sammy, back me up on this.
Yeah,
You did. I said I give credit where credit's due, and you get a certain amount of credit on that one. But look, everyone is in agreement. This is the best alternative
we
have.
Peter, how
come
last week I was a jackass? Now Obama's a genius.
Oh, but John, you suggest that you're not still a jackass. You are.
I know, that's what I'm saying. But Obama's a genius, even though he followed my advice.
He didn't follow your advice, John. Are you really serious? Are you really drinking all the Kool-Aid that you've been drinking?
I refer
you think that the whole world
show.
Got up and said, wait a minute, John Perry said this, so let's follow his advice? Is that what you really believe?
Thankfully, Simon, this is on tape. I encourage your listeners to listen last week, and my comments will vindicate me.
You suggested that we should let Putin try to negotiate a resolution, and God bless you, you were right.
Right, and you laughed
okay?
derisively.
I did. I laughed derisively, incredibly derisively, because in the end, I don't think Putin could have negotiated a ham sandwich if he didn't have missiles pointing at Syria's head. So the whole ability of Putin to negotiate anything was a function of the U.S. pointing a gun at Syria, period.
See what I mean? Obama's a genius.
And secondly, this is just an attempt to sidestep conflict. And I predict there'll be some compliance. I predict there'll be loopholes. I predict there'll be problems. But it's much better at present than the alternative. But it was only possible, John Perry, because guns were pointed at Syria's head. That's it.
Okay. All right. Before blood gets spilt on the program.
You really think that Putin could have negotiated something if there wasn't the threat of a missile strike? Come on, John.
Absolutely.
Of course. I don't think Obama had any intention of striking Syria. It was all bombast and bluster. In the heat of a campaign.
Bravo.
Yeah.
And it was all this bullshit about a red line that he thought he'd never have to answer to. So, yeah.
What campaign?
It was just complete BS.
What campaign? What's he campaigning for?
The presidency last year.
Oh, okay. So you think you think he's campaigning now for the presidency that he won in the past?
Well, he made the statement a year ago. Obviously, you don't watch Fox News. But you'll see the red line comment was made, I want to say, August of last year during the campaign.
And you don't think that there was any basis to any kind of military threat against Syria at all? There was no basis for it.
No, I think he just expected, like in this country where I call them the trained SEAL contingent, the media, academia, and Hollywood, every time him or someone remotely affiliated with his administration says something, they bark and flap their flippers. And it doesn't work like that in the world.
Really? Well, then why do we have a negotiated resolution with Putin, and why is there any kind of resolution at all if there wasn't a legitimacy to the
statesman.
Threat? Well, but do you think he could have negotiated in a vacuum? Do you think it would have been possible but for the threat?
I think our foreign policy is a vacuum.
That's a nice way of not answering the question. There's no way that Putin could have negotiated anything if there wasn't
good.
A threat of violence.
I did answer it. I just totally refuted your argument.
No,
no,
you didn't answer it. You didn't answer it at all.
Has any respect. He's an afterthought. I don't think he had any intention of bombing Syria.
You think Putin could have negotiated this resolution if there wasn't a legitimate threat by the U.S.?
I don't think it was a legitimate threat, again.
Do you think Putin could have negotiated this resolution if there wasn't a legitimate threat by the U.S.?
Yeah, of course. I don't think there is a legitimate threat.
So you don't think that they took seriously the threat in constructing this resolution?
No, I think he would have just drew the line just like I said about a month ago.
Why did they construct the resolution if there was no threat?
On the playground.
Why did they resolve something if there was no threat then?
It's yet to be resolved. I hope it is.
Well, there you go. Now you just established a hole in the whole resolution. It has yet to be resolved. So really, nothing's been resolved yet, according to what you just said.
Well, it just started. There's a plan, as far as I understand.
There's a plan. That's right.
Give it time, Peter.
Right.
You gave Obama a year to solve Benghazi, and nothing's happened.
Oh, now we're going to talk about Benghazi, which is another
sidestep. Whoa. Hold on. I need a break here to regroup.
Simon,
Bill,
you got to admit, I'm vindicated. Give me that much.
No, I will not. I'm going to come back and beat you seriously. But I do want to hear what Bill has to say on this subject.
Thank you. What I think is going on here is that all these people, Russia, the United States, various other countries, I think they sat down and they made a list who's going to get the perceived crisis. And whatever comes up, they've decided amongst themselves who would get the gold star for saving the world, and that all this is like you say, it's a Hollywood script, and not that there might have really been a problem. Like, I don't think that the people, I really believe that people were killed by the sarin gas, but I think that after the fact here, we're just sitting down and we're, who's going to get the credit for saving the day? In the meantime, they're taking all these chemical weapons and they're smuggling them out of Syria, and they're just going to put them up somewhere else. So I don't know who the heroes are, and I think that it's all behind the scenes, and I think it's a big conspiracy to make certain governments look good from time to time, and everyone's agreed on who's going to look good.
Who looks good now?
I think it's all smoke and mirrors.
Who looks good now?
I'm thinking Russia looks a little bit good, but then Obama looks good as being a tough guy, but he really doesn't have the balls to do what he needs to do. Can I say balls, Simon?
Sure.
Okay. He didn't send me the letter of what I can't say on the air. I forget.
No, you can say anything you want.
Thank you, Simon.
I'm just personally bothered. Yeah, I I see the GOP as, you know, leaping on a situation and going, you know, we showed Obama, but no, they haven't. I mean, you know, this is stupidity. That the Russians have an agenda, and opposed to what the GOP might think, you know, I don't see this as an easy out for Obama. I see this as a really rough way to go. What do you think, Peter?
Well, you know, I always compare this to something that I have to deal with on a regular basis, and that is litigation. And I deal with people on the other side of the barrel who are just – they're just terrorists. They're just trying to extort money. They don't they're not legitimate in any sense. They just want money. And the only thing that brings a resolution is the threat of a trial date. The only thing that gets them to the table is if they don't go to the table, you're going to go to trial and you're going to blow them up at trial. And that brings them to the table. If you don't have some leverage point like that, you can't negotiate, you can't achieve anything, you can accomplish nothing. Now, in this instance, as the trial date loomed, it became more and more apparent that there wasn't going to be a consensus to go in there and strike. And I don't know if Obama would have been able to launch missiles without congressional approval or UN approval, but I also know that the only thing that brought people to the table was the threat of firing missiles. I don't know what other resolution could have been constructed at this stage. And as John points out, it's not even clear that this is a resolution. It's a proposal that might in fact be come to fruition, but it's probably going to have a lot of holes in it. But at this stage, there just really wasn't any better outcome or option. Who knows what the future will hold? Who knows what event may happen down the line? I think this is far better than nothing, and far better. And I do give credit where credit's due. John is correct. He did point out that Putin would probably be the best negotiator to get a resolution. And you're absolutely right, John. Absolutely right.
Thank you, Peter.
My pleasure.
Oh,
thank you.
Good Lord. His head won't fit through a doorway.
Well, you know, we get into it pretty good, but I do have to give credit where credit's due. I didn't think that was realistic at all, and apparently now that is going to be the outcome. But I just view it as a stopgap measure. This problem, I don't think, is really going to go away, and I'm pretty sure that behind the scenes, Putin is telling Assad, look, you don't have to worry about it. You'll have this out, you'll have that out, blah, blah, blah. I don't have a lot of faith in the resolution, but it's better than doing nothing right now. I really did not like the idea that we would just sit by and we would do nothing. At least this is some attempt to do something.
Sam, what do you think? You know, should we?
Well, I do have to say John brings up a very valid point. In regards to Peter does too. Okay, this is why, and Bill had brought this, said this last week. It was all about politics. Okay, and I think we really saw that this week. Obama drew the red line in the sand. His phrase, because he wanted to look tough during the election year. Hoping he never was going to have to do that, okay? He did do that, and then he was forced to action. Because I firmly believe if he really thought what they had was concrete evidence and he wanted to send a message about American exceptionalism, which Putin slapped him over the head about, and a moral fiber and the United States is this great superpower, he wouldn't have went to Congress. He had the right to attack. He went to Congress thinking they love him, and this, that, and the other thing, and because the rest of the countries were all abandoning ship except for France. He then went to Congress and was going to lose. He was going to lose because, let's face this, this all came about because John Kerry made a sarcastic comment in Europe that if Putin that if Assad gives up his chemical weapons, then we're not going to attack. And he
said
that. And it was an off-the-cuff. It's an off-the-cuff remark. And then all of a sudden, the Russians, this is Putin at his diplomatic best, seized on that. And then he took the ball and ran with it. And then but now all three sides can claim victory. Obama can say, as Peter has pointed out, if it wasn't for my guided cruise missiles pointed at your head, you wouldn't have negotiated. Putin can say, hey, look what I was able to do. I took this remark. I brought everybody together. I kept the world safe and this and that. And Congress can all sigh because none of them are going to be held accountable about their votes and whatnot. And now they can focus on the next great crisis, the debt ceiling, which is what they really want to do. So everyone won with a political victory. But as of today, with chemical weapons aside, and I guess they were used, I don't know, there's still wholesale slaughter going on in that country. So who loses? The average schmuck, the schmuck Syrian people. Right, guys?
Right.
And who loses today? Who loses today? The Iraq, the seven car bombs that went off in Iraq and 725 people were killed. Who loses today? If you saw my Facebook post, everybody, you saw what the city of Detroit looks like.
Right. And I think that, for the sake of transparency, we should point out that it was John Perry, not John Kerry, that suggested,
No, it was John Kerry. It was John Kerry. But later, Sam, when was it this
John
week
Perry.
That John Kerry made that comment? When was it?
After John Kerry made the comment.
No, but you're right, Sam. John Kerry made a crack. It was after our show last week. I think it was earlier in the week. He said
he was being sarcastic when he said it. Peter.
He was being
sarcastic.
He was, but the Russians jumped on it, and that's what created this potential deal. Is Kerry made that crack? If they gave up their weapons, we'd be out. And he was being sarcastic, but Putin jumped on it.
Right, and so everyone's got, and as Bill pointed out, everyone's running around patting themselves on the back saying, we stopped the war, we stopped a potential war to happen. But guess what? The Civil War is still going on. So where's the answer?
Right.
So if we are the American exceptionalism, as the president said, okay, and we have this moral high ground, we only come in case of, what does it say on the whenever you see a fire extinguisher or something, it says, in case of fire, break glass, right? So do we only say to our military, in case of chemical weapons, attack, but anything else goes? So I can hack people to death. I can starve them to death. I can steal all the money. We can do whatever we want to do as bloodthirsty dictators or rotten rebels. But God damn it, we better never use chemical weapons because the United States might come after us. So let's kill,
people
another way.
Sam, what is it that you want? Do you want us to intervene at every act of violence?
No, I don't, Peter. No. That's what I'm trying to say. So you can't draw these red lines. You draw red lines, and whether it's Bush, whatever, no president should draw a red line in the sand ever again. That should be the lesson for anybody. No president should ever do that, okay? Because what we need to do is to be friends with everybody. And try to and go that way, because you can't. Obviously, the military way and nation building and regime changing and CIA secret stuff going on all over the world, it's not working, is it? The world is more disabled, is more unstable today than it was before 9/11. It was. It is. You would think it wouldn't be because we Bin Laden's dead. We did a regime change in Afghanistan. We did a regime change in Iraq. There's been the Arab Spring, and the world's in worse shape today than it than Karl Malden's nose.
Right. How much success, can we claim in Iraq, Afghanistan, the whole Arab Spring? The answer is nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, look what happened in Egypt. I mean, think about that, guys. We help participants. We point this out, and I don't think it's really been talked about enough. We helped bring Mubarak down, okay? Then there was a democracy. They had an election, okay? Now, we're the great democratic nation. We're the beacon of the world. I don't like the Muslim Brotherhood, but guess what? They're democratically elected. Then we watched the military overthrow them with the help of us because we provide the weapons. And we call, and this guy in the White House and the Senate, they don't, they'd rather focus on a chemical attack in Syria that may or may not happen from the regime in power or the rebels. Instead, we literally helped. We looked the other way by a democratic government was overthrown, and we gave and we provided the weapons for it. We've given the Egyptian military all those weapons so they could overthrow a democratically elected country, and now that's what's come out of that to me. That's American exceptionalism. That's our foreign policy.
I think we have to ask John's answer.
I was just thinking for clarification and an uplifting note, Sammy. There was a big loser today. I believe the Brownies.
Yes, Peter Haven's Dolphins have just destroyed our season. It's over. they smushed us and showed us all our warts and wrinkles, and they're in big trouble. I heard they look terrible today. I had to go visit my brother who had a heart attack this week, so I didn't get to watch the game.
I only saw the score. It was a pitcher's duel.
It was a pitcher's duel.
You know, this is a fine example of John Perry not actually,
he said there's no losers today. I can think of about 15. And I wanted to point one of them out. That's all.
That's a good one.
Oh, Lord.
Simon,
John.
I was also practicing my speech. Like, I'd like to thank the little people who made this all possible. Simon Barrett, who allowed me the podium. Peter Haven, who played my adversary.
Peter Haven, who lobs the softballs.
What was the question, Sammy? I forgot.
Oh, Lord.
Sam doesn't like our foreign policy, and Simon says, John, you have to comment on that.
Was there a question or just a
While you were looking at the while you were Googling football scores today, I was talking about what happened on what happened with the United States Arab Spring backing of the Mubarak ouster, and then helping the Muslim Brotherhood, democratic elections be held, and then watching an elected country be thrown.
So what was the question?
Well, Simon said, "What do you think about that?"
That was it.
I had no question. What did you think about foreign policy in the Middle East? I guess.
Sure.
John, I'll
try and keep it succinct. You won't have the opportunity to waffle for 20 minutes.
I'm just multi-tasking. The Giants just completed about a 50-yard bomb, but go ahead.
Okay. All right. That's great. All right.
John. I wonder what he's doing while he's talking on the show.
John, do you seriously think that we are making any progress whatsoever in the Middle East? It doesn't matter which country you name. The result seems to be the same. We give them arms, and that they use them against us.
Right. No, we're not making progress, but thankfully, President Putin is. I have confidence in the man.
Oh my God!
I'm gonna remember that comment, John Perry.
Yeah,
I have confidence in
did
Putin.
Did you guys read his article? I mean, that was one of the best State of the Unions I've ever read.
His op-ed?
Well, yeah, he was right on every point.
Unfortunately, he was.
Yeah, I don't understand. People are just haters. They don't want to give credit where it's due. If Obama said that stuff, he'd be up for another Nobel Prize. You guys know it's true.
It's true.
I don't know it's true. I need to read this op-ed piece.
Yeah, it's in the New York Times.
And I don't think that anything would change if Obama said it. I think he'd still hate him.
I will say this. I suspect that Vladdy didn't write it. He may have had some help.
I'm sure he did.
But it made a lot of sense. You should read it, Peter.
Yeah, I will. I will, and I thank you for that.
To answer your question, no. We're not doing a damn bit of good in the Middle East or anywhere else in the world.
No.
Okay, so... Why are we spending this money that we can ill afford?
Well, we're trying to influence people in the region, but it's failing.
No.
It seems like the people we're giving money and weapons to hate us as much as the people that were opposed. I don't know.
No.
William, what do you think? I hear you humming.
I think it's truly dollars and cents. We have to have conflicts in the Middle East because we're not paying enough for gasoline and oil. So we have to have a little bit of issues going on there. Otherwise, the price of gas would remain at a good low. The United States always had gas was the cheapest in the United States, and we're trying to compete with the other countries that are paying, you know, over $10 a gallon. So we need to have conflicts there to raise up the gasoline. Additionally, we really need to send more rifles. The NRA's trying to allow people to have more and more weapons and to be able to bear arms, and they're not doing very well. So we really need to deploy arms to the Middle East so that we can keep those economic parts of the United States alive. You know, we've averted World War III on something that never really existed, and look at all the people that got credit for stopping World War III on this particular issue. We're going to have World War III when we're not selling enough arms and we're not, you know, the price of oil hasn't gone up high enough. So this was, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. I just don't trust us anymore. Like I really trusted them, but I really don't trust them anymore. What do you think?
Oh, I think that's delightful. Peter, you will probably agree with me that the U.S. only does well in a U.S. War economy. We give billions of dollars away in foreign aid, but the foreign aid is for, armaments and airplanes. It's stupid, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I've always said that these are very complex issues, and I don't know. I agree that it's very problematic, and it's not clear that we're achieving anything. but I'm not sure what the alternatives are. I kind of think that we're darned if we do and we're darned if we don't. And I also think that, unfortunately, a lot of people who make money by manufacturing weapons and aircraft and things of that nature have tremendous influence over policy decisions and that they profit from it. But, you know, on the whole, I don't think anybody will disagree that it's a bit of a mess. And it's not clear what good, if any, we're doing with anything that's going on in the Middle East.
John, would you agree that all of the billions of dollars we spend, you know, arming people so they can shoot our troops is kind of dumb?
No, Simon, we've had this discussion before. I think loyalty to your allies is important. I completely supported giving arms to Mubarak. It kept the peace for 30 years. We should have supported him and kept him in power. We should have kept the Shah in power 30 years ago, and none of this would have occurred. You got to back your allies. Because I knew when Mubarak was ousted, Assad or any other dictator would have no place to go if they were deposed. You got to offer them a safe sanctuary, say like, even probably the worst of the worst, Idi Amin, got to live luxuriously in Saudi Arabia. And
I thought he went to Paris and lived there.
No, he lives in Saudi Arabia. But point being, Sammy, if you don't offer these guys an out, the next dictator will fight to the death like Assad's doing. He may have taken a pass if Mubarak was allowed to land softly. You know what I mean? You got to think ahead.
Okay. All right.
But, Simon, I agree with giving our allies weapons.
Yeah, I do, too. I do, too.
I don't see that because then you can influence policy in the region. Why do you think Putin is in Syria now? Because they have a naval base, and he can talk to Assad. We can't because we're isolationists in the area now, which is what you recommend. And then you say, how come we can't get the parties to sit down? Because we have no credibility or any relationship.
Oh, okay. But, you know, chemical weapons are really bad. You know, pretty much everyone has said, you know they're not good for parties. And, you know, Assad is claiming that, oh, you know, come on down. You can take all of my chemical weapons.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there's just this minor issue. There's still a civil war going on. And the latest deal is that the CIA are funneling arms to the opposition. I mean, where are we on this, John?
I think that's exactly right. I would really like to hear from the badass from Youngstown.
Where do we go from here?
Oh, look, for once, John doesn't have an answer.
Oh, Simon, you're right. We're supplying arms to the rebels. What could I add? Of course, I don't agree with it. I said I don't know who set off those chemical weapons. I don't believe that Assad did it just based on the evidence I've heard. But I don't know who did it. But I don't think that should have been red light anyway. As I said, one thing that does bother me is people say, oh, Assad killed 100,000 people. That's not true. How do you know he didn't kill 50,000 and the rebels killed 50? So that's one thing that I think needs to be set straight.
Okay.
But other than that, Simon, I agree with you.
I'll set it straight right now. I don't care if the rebels killed 50.
No, but you got to admit, all the reporting is, oh, Assad killed 100,000. I've yet to hear anything else, and that obviously is ridiculous that he killed every person who died in that civil war for his side.
No, listen to me. You know, I know it's tough because I'm not on Fox, but, you know, it doesn't matter if he killed 5 people. It's still wrong. I mean, don't you agree with that?
Yeah, Simon, but the opposition's going to kill 5 or more. I mean, that's what happens in war. Of course it's all wrong. That's why I wish we could negotiate it, and we'll see what happens. But the rebels are just as bad with those al-Qaeda elements as Assad.
Well, there is a distinction here that's being drawn between the war on the one hand and the use of chemical weapons on the other. And I think the intent of this latest diplomatic effort has been to prevent the use of chemical weapons, regardless of which side used them. And so, I mean, I think that distinction gets blurred a lot. Every time there's a talk of doing something to prevent the Syrian government from using chemical weapons again, it turns into a debate about, well, which side are you backing? And I always felt that those were two different questions, that this had little to do with which side you're backing and more to do with whether or not you were going to tolerate the use of chemical weapons, especially in the manner in which it was done here, where citizens died, non-combatants, civilians. children. I don't know. There are reports that for several weeks prior to this, the CIA was supplying light armaments and light weaponry to the CIA was supplying light weaponry to the Syrian rebels. And I don't know what decision was made in that regard or why, except apparently there was an attempt to back the rebels against against the Assad government. And I don't know what to make of any of that, because it seems to me so often in this world, CIA does whatever it wants to do. It's not clear to me that they're answering or acting for anybody, but I suppose that's a whole other discussion.
That is a hugely interesting question. You know, who do the CIA answer to?
In theory, they're supposed to answer to the executive branch, but in reality, I don't know.
Doesn't it bother you just a little bit? You know, the CIA, supplying arms to a group of people, and it's being reported that somewhere between 15 to 25% of the rebels are actually Al Qaeda affiliated. Yeah, so. Oh, we've played this game before. Ow, it hurts when I do that. I don't want to do it again. Yeah,
right.
We're all saying, let's not play this game again.
We would have learned when we supplied the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, right? And that became the Taliban.
Right, and go back further. Ollie North. I mean, his story was a good one.
Well, that was actually a plus. He supplied the Contras. They were our allies. What's so funny about that?
Oh, come on.
I just think it's funny that it was okay to supply it to the guy that you like, even though Congress had said you couldn't do it.
They were our allies. That's what I'm pointing out, not our enemies, like the Taliban.
Who's allies with the Contras?
They were handpicked by
the CIA to overthrow Daniel Ortega because he smoked Cuban cigars and liked Che. I mean, come on, John. I love you to death, John, but, you can't take the side. That's illegally changing regimes. There's no
Sammy, what do you have against freedom fighters?
The Contras were not freedom fighters.
Freedom fighters and terrorists.
Daniel Ortega was democratically elected. Reagan couldn't deal with that, so they got Nancy's Ouija board out, and they came up with this crazy idea for arms for hostages. When I think people want when someone takes hostages, they want money. We have plenty of. We could have printed some money and gave it to them and got those poor people back. Okay, but no,
yeah.
This was a whole idea to change a regime, and the United States government tried to change regimes. If they're not, as Peter pointed out, you've got to let other people determine their own fate. We have fucked up, pardon my language, and I'm not pardon my language, just country after country after country because we don't like who's in charge of it. However, if someone would have stuck their nose in our civil war, oh boy, we would have been really mad. So we do everything around that. We've got involved in the Chinese Civil War in the 1860s, and we were on both sides, because that's what we are with the CIA, Simon. Obama's on one hand is saying, you're right, I don't know who runs the CIA. The CIA runs the CIA. That's scary. Our whole government is out of control. It's so big and mammoth and does whatever it wants to do. Damn the people. So what do you have? They decide to go after the to side with the rebels, who's Al-Qaeda, who has been pointed out by many, many people smarter than I am,
By bombing Assad, you help Al Qaeda. Now, boy, have we come full circle since 9/11, haven't we?
Think about it.
Because we're so interested. Because we're so interested in, we don't like, I don't know what the phrase is, the dog in power. If we like this dog, we pat it. If we don't like this dog, we try to kill it. Why?
But Sam, can we take Putin's advice and join him in fighting terrorism and Al-Qaeda?
I thought that was the war on terror that the Obama administration and the Bush administration have been fighting. Obviously not. Because by bombing Assad, we become Al-Qaeda's air force.
That's right.
Well, they don't have an air force. I know that. Okay. So
he opened Al Qaeda. Obviously, that was Putin's
right. So I don't understand it. But on the same token, John, you know, I think we've got to learn our lesson as a country and be friends with all. As our founding father, as Thomas Jefferson wanted, getting involved in these entangling alliances caused problems. He was friends with everybody. That's what you want, trade with everybody, free trade, back and forth, and that would be competition, be more jobs, and this and that, but we can't have that.
Who wants to be friends with everybody?
Jefferson.
He couldn't even get along with John Adams.
Because he didn't like Adams' foreign policy, my friend. He didn't like Adam foreign policy. Look, okay, you have to be friends with, in today's world, with instantaneous communication and the fact that nuclear weapons, just chemical weapons, there's all sorts of stuff out there. We have to get along better. You know what, John? I'm sick and tired of our tax dollars going to knock off people we don't like. I don't know Bashar Assad. But I'm tired of my tax dollars trying to kill both sides. I want my tax dollars at home, where they belong, to help people have health care, to have people, better school systems, better roads. We give nothing for our own domestic major issues in this country. And
I'm
going to
tell you that we can be universally loved, and you know, you'll understand this being a badass. Money talks, bullshit walks.
That's correct.
Okay, John. Once again, you know, you are drifting off, you know, the subject. But,
I'm trying to focus, Simon.
Oh, well, try not to.
My support group isn't working, apparently.
No, it's not working. I think Sam brings up an absolutely valid point. You know, we may be, a hugely rich country, except we're poor. And, you know, we have lots of people here at home that, you know, have nothing. You know, they live from paycheck to paycheck. And yet we, willingly give billions of dollars to other countries. Isn't it time that, you know, we focused on the people within the borders rather than the people outside of the borders?
Simon, I've said many times, no, absolutely not. You can't take your ball and go home. It's a global economy. What's going on in the European Union affects us just as much as what's going on in Detroit. And no, you got to have a global strategy. And I don't see anything wrong with paying people to do our bidding.
Okay, here's an idea for you. Apple just released some new iPhones. Yeah, I'm not an iPhone fan. Wouldn't buy one on a dare. But that they're built in China. Why don't we slap a $100 per phone, cost on it? And
very easy,
that
Simon.
Way,
it would start a trade war. And all you have to do is Google Smoot Hawley Tariff Act, 1930.
Okay. All right. Why?
That's what caused the Great Depression. smoot Holly
right,
effect.
Right, but maybe Apple might be willing to up the price a little bit and bring the
Apple,
manufacturing to the U.S. rather than having it done in China.
It's a very interesting question, Simon, and here's what I would like to pose. What do you think the American public would say if they had to choose between getting their less expensive iPhone from China or their more expensive iPhone from the States? What do you think most people would say? I don't know.
Oh,
I'll take the cheaper phone.
Well, I kind of think that in some senses, Americans may be their own worst enemy in that regard, because they may, in fact, do exactly what John just said. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. But it is the question. I mean, what if the American public got in an uproar because they had to pay, I don't know, $50 or $100 more? Or I don't know what it would be. I really don't know. $5 more, $10 more.
Well,
I don't know. Maybe Americans would be – maybe they'd be fine with it. Maybe they'd say,
yeah,
I want to do that.
Well, I think that
okay.
– I don't know. Can I chime in here?
William, you should know by now that you can say balls, just so you know.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, I'm thinking that maybe what needs to happen on there is we need to come up with a plan in which – a certain percentage of things are made in the United States. And if we're really looking into a global economy, maybe you figure out a plan on how we do a certain amount of manufacturing in other countries that are in severe problems, say, for instance, like Greece. I mean, I know there's other issues there, but if we come up and we're looking at a global economy, how come when we look at a global economy, it's all China? That isn't a global economy. That just means that we found the place to do it the cheapest. We need to figure out a way in which to kind of balance where we make the products. Like, for instance, if we're supplying the guns to Syria rebels, why don't we make them in the United States and ship them over there? At least we got Americans with jobs instead of just giving them money, you know, for instance. Just to be a little facetious, but why aren't we looking at a true global economy and saying that China's our only answer for making things right? Because that's just
because right now they're doing it the best and the cheapest.
Well, they're not doing it the best because there's a lot of manufacturing that was sent over to China, and China made bad products, and those products are coming back to Germany. They're coming back to the United States because they're doing such a poor job with those products. So
I'm
thinking.
That's a good point. And they're also, just so everybody knows, there's also a lot of litigation about Chinese products, basically poisoning people and harming people and things of that nature. So you raise a good point.
Yeah.
And yet the market still tends to favor buying products or having products manufactured in China. I mean, can you go anywhere in any store and not pick something up and see that it's made in China on the bottom?
Yeah, well,
John's right. It's fear of a trade war.
Yeah, I saw a – well, it didn't involve China, but it did bother me. My wife bought me a lump of salami, which I really like. Italian salami, made in Wisconsin. Oh, you know, what's wrong with this picture?
I don't know. I think Wisconsin probably makes very good salami. I'm trying to figure out the problem.
Did you get food poisoning?
Well, if it says Italian, shouldn't it come from Italy?
Italian is a style. It's like Italian dressing.
Silly me.
That was a good one.
Yeah, Simon, where should English muffins come from?
Good point. Oh, my God. Good point.
Okay.
John Kelly?
I'll tell you what. Let's talk about English muffins. I know exactly what they are. I like them. And I'll tell you what, they are nothing like the garbage that you're going to find at your local store.
Simon, are you talking about a crumpet?
No, I'm talking about a muffin.
Well, how does it differ? I've seen crumpets.
Well, he's going to explain. Yeah, what's the difference, Simon?
Okay, let's move on to lox. Sam, you know what lox is, I'm sure.
Nothing like lox bagel and cream cheese with some amazing onion.
Right.
Are you talking about the lox? You're not talking about the lox from Dr. Seuss, are you?
No.
No.
All right. When I live in a relatively it is a small town. I've got limited shopping capabilities. I wanted lox, and lox to me is bright red, thinly sliced, and just delicious. What I got was, pink glob. I mean,
delivered. Who made it, Monsanto?
Oh, very likely.
How can you say that? Because Monsanto makes everything that looks like globs, and people put it in their stomachs. And don't poison themselves daily. So I said we shouldn't be. If it's about chemical warfare, we should be bombing Monsanto's headquarters, not besides Palace. But
Sam, how many jobs would you destroy there?
How many what?
How many jobs would you destroy?
How many jobs have I destroyed?
Oh, if you bomb Monsanto, how many jobs would that
John,
destroy?
I would create zillions of jobs by getting rid of some of these giant corporations. If we got rid of some, if we broke up these corporations like they should be, these mega corporations, and got and had free trade with all, we'd have more jobs than we know what to do. But we don't. I'll give credit. You want to take care of the world? Real simple. How much money does Ben Bernanke print for Wall Street every month? $80 billion. Okay, why don't we give Wall Street $40 billion next month? Take that other $40 billion and spread it around and have a day of jubilee like they did in the Old Testament, and spread it around to people. Give it to people who need it. Give it to people who pay taxes. Give it to people who are struggling in small businesses. Yeah, that's what we need to do. We have the money in this world to fix the problem. The problem is there's too many sticky fingers around. Too much greed.
Well, Sammy, you obviously don't realize. Those bankers are a lot smarter than us and can spend the money more wisely.
I knew it was all over during the housing crisis when we bailed out the people who created the crisis, not the people who suffered from it. That's right. I definitely ought to realize that Washington is bought and sold. So anybody who thought that our government isn't bought and sold, that's when you got to realize when the people who created the mess all got bailed out. And they got more money, and they got bonuses, and the people who got effed and lost their homes and probably lost their credit and didn't get anything got nothing. Got the hole in the bagel, as Simon would say. That's when it was over. And Wall Street came back roaring. People made all that money, all on tax dollars. All these companies were bailed out, including General Motors and all these other things. I know a lot of people from Youngstown because he had stock in General Motors. I know a lot of contractors who owed money by old General Motors, not the new. They got screwed. They lost everything. The stock was wiped out. Some of these people who owed money for fixing things there at the plant or supplying the plant, they got screwed because they were owed by old General Motors. And so anybody who doesn't realize that's what it was all about, it's all about the money. Follow the dollars. In the land of the dollar bill, those that need the dollar bill aren't getting them. We're all taxed. We all pay usury taxes. We pay our fees. We do everything to help and as good citizens do. I'm sure, Peter, you pay a ton of taxes and fees when you file stuff. Bill, I don't know what you do for a living, but I'm sure you pay taxes. John, I know you do. Simon, I do. We pay a ton of money into the system.
Well, truthfully, Sammy, I try not to.
Okay.
Okay.
I am amazed, but I just think that you know, we could fix the problem if the right people were there, but the right people never have a shot anymore. I hate to be cynical, but I got to cut the Browns loss.
Okay, just for fun, let's take a caller. Oops.
Oh, hello.
Caller from 916. What's your question or comment for us?
Well, first, a comment is I like it that you're back on track, that we get to talk about us, as in USA. I think that's great. Let's do that for a while before the hour ends. And then the question would be, how do you challenge the American that does want to participate? Because from what I'm hearing in a lot of internet radio shows like yours, people are really calling in. They're angry. They're starting to get the pitchforks. And is it in any way possible in order to guide those people to really look at what we were like before we got involved in World War II? And I'll take the answers off the line. Thank you for a great conversation, sir.
Oh, I think that's a great question. Hang on the line. And Sam, do you want to do you want to run with that one?
I'll take it. You know, okay. I'm not quite sure what she was suggesting with that comment about what it was like before we got involved in World War II. I'm just not sure what she meant by that. But I'll say this. Why did we get involved in World War II? Does anybody remember?
We were attacked. Pearl Harbor.
We were attacked. We didn't have a choice. We were attacked. We tried to remain neutral. We tried to remain outside the theater of conflict. And we were attacked because we were too big to ignore. And parties to the war feared that we would align with one side or another. And they attempted to engage in a preemptive strike designed to take that out. And by the way, pretty much the same thing happened with World War One. You know, it was the same
One thing on World War II I have to interject. We declared war on Japan, not Germany. Germany then declared war on us. Think about that.
Yes,
another one of Hitler's brilliant moves. Thank God he did it.
The point is, we can't stand on the sidelines and stay out of it. We're pulled into it one way or another.
Peter, nowadays I disagree with you.
Okay.
I think, if we are vitally attacked like Pearl Harbor, then our military will stand up to anybody. I have no problem with that. We were attacked at 9/11. We went after the right people, the Taliban in Afghanistan. It took us 10 years to find Bin Laden, which I still never could figure out. We did go after them, and we kicked their ass, and they were out of there relatively quickly. And then, unfortunately, it's been the follow-up there that's been terrible. We were attacked. When we've been attacked, War of 1812, they were capturing our sailors, and the British were beating the crap out of our merchant marine and impressing our sailors into their navy. They were attacking us. That's what led to that. I mean, but we were being attacked. And I think if we were attacked now, if Bashar Assad had 50 terrorists and they blew up 50 bridges in America, we would have every right to attack them. Okay? But that's different. You know, in regard to that. So go ahead and run with what Chelsea said.
Well, I think we're making the same point in two different ways. You're saying that what you've witnessed today in Syria is not enough for us to go on the offensive, and the consensus seems to agree with you. And yet, the other point that I think needs to be made is that it doesn't work for us just to pretend that we're not going to get involved. We're involved simply because of our size and our position in the world, and we're the 800-pound gorilla in the room. We just can't, you know, we can't pretend we're not involved. One form or another, we're involved.
So if you're involved, let's make it better, though. Let's not be involved because we have the biggest weapon, we have the biggest gun, we have the most guns, we have the most this, we have the most that. As John has pointed out many times, let's get off dependency on oil in the Middle East, make it less important, and they don't have our kit in the ringer, so to speak.
I agree with that, but
okay, but he's never done that. Peter, why? Why haven't we done that? Because of the
Right now we can't because the oil industry has too much invested in that asset.
They don't just own the politicians.
They own the public because the public likes their automobiles. They like their unleaded gasoline, and they like the fact that life is customary to them, and they're not entirely ready for some of the radical changes that are going to be necessary to get us to that level. But I agree with you. I would like to get us there. I agree with that 100%.
Peter, think of this. How many jobs did you create? I mean, it would be created if we were doing domestic, you know, not caused by natural gas, caused by nuclear, caused by sun, home
electricity.
Heated by sun.
Electricity seems
water
to be,
power, fire, whatever energy sources are out there, we would create.
Well, they're trying right now, John, on all those fronts. They're trying on all those fronts. But it hasn't gotten consumer friendly enough yet, and it hasn't evolved yet. And you could bet that the oil industry is going to fight it lock, step, and barrel.
Right, and because the corporations, whatever economic item we pick, if it's energy, we'll be able to say our politicians, our leaders, will not do diddly squat because they're controlled by that particular industry.
Some politicians have tried. Some politicians have come out and spoken out about how we need to get off of oil and onto cleaner resources.
And this is the one thing, you and I agree on this. This is what I could never understand about Obama, Pelosi, and that crowd is, wouldn't you want the world, America, to be safer by having less dependency on foreign oil? Why wouldn't you be for the Keystone Pipeline if that would help us be more less dependent on foreign oil? It's a start. It's not a beginning. I know it's not the total solution, but it's a step in the right direction. We can't even get steps in the right direction by either the Republicans or Democrats because they're owned by these giant mega corporations. And we are all suckers. Because because any of us stand up, what happens to us? We're crushed like bugs. Because you can't compete. Now, we're throwing some crumbs as individuals, but what's happening, the one thing, we are a crumbling superpower, just like those countries, just like the Ottoman Empire, just like the Habsburgs in 1914, we are right there. We think we're just all-powerful, we have the biggest weapons in town and this and that. We are a crumbling empire from within, and all you have to do is look at Detroit, look at the cities in your state of California that are all going bankrupt. Things are going terrible. We all know inner cities across America are in terrible condition right now. Most Americans, as Simon said, are barely living, living paycheck to paycheck. The inequity of the wealth is going to crumble this country, and that's when the changes are going to take place.
John, you must have some thoughts on that idea.
Well, first I'd like to think that lady for calling in, taking the time. As far as her question, I don't think we'll look nostalgically on the 30s, what she's saying. I mean, to me, it was poverty, hunger-stricken, dust bowl, but I don't know. But if she wanted to clarify, if that's what she was saying, things were better then. I don't think anyone who was around then would say that. But I don't know.
No. Actually, my question is more direct.
I thought you were saying what about her question? Wasn't that what she asked?
Yeah.
I thought you were talking more about how angry people were on Blog Talk Radio, and people are starting to get pissed off, and it's a grassroots movement out there that you can't lump together and say it's the Tea Party, as the Democrats, the mainstream media want you to believe. There's a group of people of all shapes, sizes, and colors, and religions, and sexual orientations, and whatnot, who are pissed off at how we're, you know, we're talking today on the 50-year, I believe, anniversary of the collapse of the financial institutions that was bailed out. And nothing's changed. It's gotten worse. And I think people see that. And that's a good thing. And, you know, Peter, I know why, and I love you, and I know why you really deeply wanted that attack in Syria. I understand that, and I respect you for that. But I think what's happened is America has woke up and said, wait a minute, this doesn't work. And when we have problems at home, and those need to be addressed, and you assholes, you work for us. Stop listening to us for once. And I think they did. And I think they did. And I applaud. That's where our democracy works, once in a while. And I think this time we got it right. And all those and all the king's men and all the king's horses can take all the credit they want, as far as I'm concerned. But we didn't attack. And I think the world's a safer place today for that. And for that, I'm eternally grateful today.
I personally was in favor of some strategic strikes, or at least part of me was. But, yeah, another part of me said, no, we don't want to get involved. You know, it's too grumpy. It's, you know, it's another Iraq. I think we should just stay out of the entire region. What do you think, John?
It's a big region. I don't think we can. I got to side with Peter on this one. I mean, let's face it. Now Iran's going to be emboldened, and I just can't see Israel allowing them to move forward in this uranium production. So I think eventually we're going to have to become involved. But I think we got a year or two reprieve, Simon. But if you're talking longevity, the whole world is going to be involved eventually if Iran gets the bomb.
Oh. Okay. Now, everyone likes to, grump about Obama and his red line. John, where is your red line with Iran and the bomb?
Well, I think a few years ago, didn't Israel hit Syria's manufacturing plant where they were producing uranium?
It was Iraq's, I thought.
It hit Syria as well.
Was it Syria? Yeah.
They,
they did.
But Syria.
Reagan was president the first time they attacked.
Syria was in the last few years. I think Israel's got the best intelligence, Simon, and I trust their discretion. Because remember, they assassinated that Iranian scientist like a year ago. So, you know, they're obviously on top of it, and they know how soon they're supposed to acquire this. The capability, because they've been targeting their scientists for the last few years. So it's not for me to draw a red line. I'm not like Obama. I'm not going to make worthless threats.
Okay. So at what point would John Perry, if you were president, say, all right, enough. We've got to do something.
I would trust Israel on this one. Like Sam said, they can defend themselves on this issue, and I just tell them, we got your back. You guys have better intelligence than us, and I defer to your knowledge. I don't see any reason why we should call the shots on that when they're the ones who are on the ground.
Sam, would you agree with that?
First of all, I agree with. I totally agree with what John says. And the president shouldn't be drawing red lines in the sand. Okay, I mean that's just because you never know what's going to happen. Regardless, it just really backs yourself into a corner. For a guy who I consider very smart, I understood politically why he said it, but it's just sometimes you can't do stuff like that. So
be flexible, right, Sam, and adjust.
What?
Like a football game, you got to be flexible and adjust.
That was a major mistake, because you're dealing in a region that's so complicated and goes back for thousands of years of people hating each other. One day they hate each other, the next day they're in bed with each other, and you just don't know who your enemies are from day to day over there. So why draw a red line in the sand? But If Iran gets the bomb under its present regime and Netanyahu is still the prime minister, they will take that nuclear reactor out. I think there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They've done it in the past. They, as John has pointed out, I expect them to do it again, and that the United States, no one will do anything at that point. It's funny, you know, that no one will do anything, but except the Israelis will do it, and you know, then they'll be condemned in the UN, and France will probably vote against Israel, but they'll go into Syria. That's funny. By the way, guys, anybody saw the subplot that in this whole Syrian conflict? The French have said they may use nuclear power, they may use military intervention if the United States won't. Talk about a laughable statement, huh? But they didn't say that. I thought that's cool on the CNN thing. But I don't think you can ever live. Again, like I said, I think the answer, as John Perry said, is money talks and bullshit walks. I said, look, it's my understanding, and I think a lot of other people, when I read on the Internet and some other places all over and talked to others, that the sanctions are working against Iran. And we've got to keep that noose on. If that's what's going to get them to be peaceful with it, then, look, do they have every right to make uranium and make a bomb? I guess they do, don't they? It's what their intentions are to do with that bomb. That's the key question here. I mean, do I want Iran to have a nuclear power? Yes, if they're using it for peaceful purposes to help their country. If they're their people and the economy and the power and all that sort of stuff, wonderful. That's good. But if they're using it if they have purposes designed to destroy Israel, the United States, or any other peaceful, loving places, we have to go to the United Nations and, we have to stop that. And that's that. But they have to strike first. Would they strike first, Peter? Or mutual assured destruction?
Are you saying that if you have the chance to knock out, uranium sources that would manufacture a nuclear arsenal, you would rather wait until they actually use the bomb on us first?
Well, I'm going to ask you, how do you know they're going to use it? That's the $24 million question.
This topic of discussion started when we discussed Israeli preemptive strikes against, sources of uranium.
Would Israeli strike them? I said they will. I'm not saying I'm for it.
Okay.
I'm against it.
And by the way, so that's just an example of when intelligence indicated that a preemptive strike was necessary. And we all tend to agree that as far as the Middle East is concerned, we tend to defer to Israeli intelligence. I would like to point out that, as far as I understand it, the Israelis were in favor of limited strikes on Syria on this particular instance. But be that as it may,
I know you brought that up, but I've also seen some Israelis say they were afraid
There seems to be a difference of opinion in that regard, and I guess we'll just leave it at that. It's my understanding that the Israeli government favored limited military strikes on Syria in this particular instance. But, I'm not sure what the broader point is. I mean, you guys talk about red lines, but this was an application.
Well, let me ask Peter, are you for bombing? If Iran gets the bomb, I don't know I'm not a nuclear scientist, so I don't know how far away they are from getting it or whatnot. Let's say they get the bomb. They have a big parade, and they say, we get like the Russians used to have when we were kids growing up. They parade the bomb down some city. What's the city in Iran, Simon?
Oh,
Tehran. Tehran. They have a big parade. They're all zig-hiling the bomb that they have now, okay? And they're going to show it all the world. They got the nuclear bomb. Does that give us the right to attack them? And are we supposed to attack them, or is Israel supposed to attack them, or anybody else, and set up thermonuclear war across the world? Because we think they have one, and they're not allowed to have one.
Well,
I'm asking you, the
short answer to your question is that if they're having a parade down the street with their bombs in hand, it's too late. They've already gotten it. The time to do something, if you're ever going to do something, is before they get to that stage. Secondly, Iran I'm also concerned about other countries. How about Iraq? How about how comfortable do you feel with the North Korean president and nuclear capability?
All he's done is kill his girlfriend for having sex with Dennis Rodman, and he saber rattles all the time. He's a blowhard.
I think that as a people, we have to be smart, and if we think there's a serious threat brewing wherever it may be, we have to take it seriously and consider appropriate response. But by the same token, I got to tell you, I think we're on collision course with some catastrophic event, because sooner or later, somebody's going to get their hands on something. Something's going to slip through the cracks, and I think 911 will look like a firecracker.
Yeah, you said that.
And that's coming. And God help us, knock on wood, I don't want to see it. I don't know if it's 5 years away, 10 years away, 20 years away. I also worry, you know, in the wake of 911, you know, my father's a doctor, and in the wake of 911, there was all this discussion about the next terrorist attack. And my father was convinced that the next terrorist attack was going to be unleashing a biological disease across the borders. And he was convinced that they were going to send people across borders who were infected. It could be something as simple as smallpox. And the U.S. vaccine supply was just dangerously low. And an outbreak of particular virulent strains of smallpox could cause catastrophic loss of life in the U.S. Millions of people could die very quickly because they just don't have the ability to vaccinate them. Now, my father's a doctor. He's thinking about biological terrorism. I see chemical weapons being used. I see nuclear capacity growing. All of these things concern me, all of them. And I don't know what the best course of action is. I don't like the idea of sitting around and doing nothing. But I also have to say, I feel a certain sense of inevitability. And I don't know how to balance that. And I'm not sure if there's anything is. I don't think you stick your head in the sand and ignore it. But by the same token, I agree that, you know, we have to let democracy run its course. And we also have to, we can't do everything. We're not the guardian of the world. But by the same token, when you have the capacity to act, and do something about it, listen to me. When you have the capacity to do something, it imposes a burden upon you. You yourself impose it upon yourself simply because you know you can. If you're sitting in a bus, Sam, and you see a little girl in the back seat and some big guy has her on her lap and she's screaming, crying, "Keep your hands off of me," don't you feel burdened to do something? Don't you feel burdened to get up and say something?
That's different.
Well,
that's
the
different.
Point is, the point
that's different
is,
because,
when
and
you're,
I agree,
when you're
I agree to, with your points. I agree with you, and I agree with that stuff. But we also, when, where do you? I hate to say this. Where do you draw the
you
line?
You can't draw the
because
line.
Then you have to play God, and then you have to guess. Well, put this person in power. We're the United States. We're going to determine everything. We're going to run the world. We're going to run the world. We're going to tell you what.
No, we're not saying we're going to run the world.
That's the only way you're
going to
be safe.
Don't put all Cleveland rocks on me. You're going too far. I'm just telling you.
You can't do that. It's impossible. Why can't you be friends with everybody and then try to live
because
in the country?
See Pearl Harbor. Doesn't work.
But Pearl Harbor. That's because Tojo listened to you. He did a preemptive strike on the United States. Told you, listen to you.
You've talked openly about, you know, how Israel is our most stable ally in that region, and it is, and I agree, and everyone agrees. But as soon as you're friends and allies with Israel, you're going to make enemies. It's just that's the way.
Okay, so what's the best way to deal with that? Okay, be friends with everybody.
You can't be friends with everybody when your allies are enemies with others through no fault of their own.
First of all, I'll tell you one way to do that. The biggest problem we've had is trying to make and Kerry's doing it again. Is this Palestine? You know, carving forcing the Israelis, where we give money to them and whatnot, and the corrupt Palestinian. You want to talk about the craziest thing? How about the corrupt Palestinian authority that we deal with? It's more corrupt than our own government, but yet we fund them millions.
Okay, I hate to break in, but we've got about 30 seconds left on air, and so we got to wrap this up. Sam, give me your parting thoughts.
I'm sorry, I was a little. I tried to be much more upbeat this week and preach some more brotherhood and sisterhood and whatnot, because the Browns really have me down. And I wish everybody a great week. Thank you for this great conversation and the opportunity to participate in it. We had someone call in. I think that was terrific. And I hope other people will call in and listen, and maybe we can help some people.
Sure. And John?
A couple things. Sammy, I'd like to give you some perspective. I think you're right on. You're just going a little overboard.
No. I know what you... some perspective is, let's try and keep it to, a 30-second deal.
I was, Simon. I was going to say, Sammy, someone who wanted to be friends with everyone, Neville Chamberlain. Remember that. And good to be with you guys, and hope you have a good week. And, Bill, I hope you guys recover. Sorry about that fire in New Jersey.
Yeah, where were you, John, when that fire was lit?
Yeah.
I was in California.
We lost
you.
Him, by the way. Peter, your final thoughts.
Sam, I love it when you go off. Don't ever say you're sorry. We love you just the way you are. John, I love it when you're right. I love it even more when you're wrong. William, I love having you on board, if nothing to try and keep us balanced. God bless that caller. I didn't think anybody listened to us. And Simon, thank you for everything. One problem down. We only got about 3,000 or 4,000 more to solve, but by gosh, we're going to get to them all.
You bet. And we will be back next week. And until then, it's goodbye.